Good morning, how are you?
I'm extremely well. Now, do you join us from the 1,000 acres that is Diddley Squat?
Absolutely. I'm looking at it now, the cows planning their next escape mission, and the wheat growing. Yes, you're right in the middle of it here.
I mean, do you love it? Let me just background a little bit. I've got some land of my own that I, you know, go between the city and the country, and I thought that was very exciting. I've got 14 acres. And I know what it takes to look after 14 acres. So what the hell do you think you were doing buying 1,000?
Well, it was foolish, I admit. But the cows escaped, because we've now got cows. It's the latest venture of my new money-making scheme. Because I think we can have Australian and New Zealand sheep now. So there's no point raising those, because they'll be too expensive. So I thought, I'll get cows. And they just escape all the time. It's like, honestly, they watch the great... One of them's riding a motorcycle up and down the border fence the other day, like Steve McQueen. But the other day, they got out, and it was dawn, and it was a beautiful, beautiful autumn morning, and all the trees were sort of gold and red and yellow and so on, and there was a low, low mist, but a blue sky. And I was herding the cows back through the woods, and I thought, well, now, I don't really get paid for this, but what a fantastic way of passing the time. So I love it. I really do. It's very difficult to do. It's a fantastic existence. It really is.
Has the program you've made farming more appreciated by people who didn't know about farming, and two, made you appreciate your land more?
Both, for sure. I really genuinely didn't think many people would watch the program. I don't think anybody did. And everybody involved with the making of it just thought, well, you know, it'll be a little thing tucked away on Amazon. And then... I don't know what it's done in New Zealand, but it's absolutely huge here. I mean, everybody's watched it. All I'm asked about in the street is tram lines and sheep and farming questions, which is extraordinary. When I spent 30 years driving around corners too quickly and shouting, suddenly I've become the sort of spokesman for farming. And has it made me appreciate the land? Yeah, really a lot. You know, I worry about soil now, which I must confess I never have in the past. I do appreciate it.
And you won that award. What was the award you won?
We've won a couple of farming awards, which is extraordinary. I never thought I'd win. I didn't think I'd ever do farming. There's a couple of farming publications here, Farmers Weekly and Farmers Guardian. And one of them gave a jointly to me and my tractor driver, who's Caleb. If you've seen the program, you'll know him well. And which is great. It's very thrilling to be recognised, because farmers here absolutely love the program, because they say it's the first time there's been a show that says, no, this is actually what farming is. It's not pumping pigs full of chemicals, and it's not, you know, it's trying to earn an honest crust, providing food for people. Although somebody said to me the other day, the definition of farming is working 400 hours a month for very little pay, producing food for people who think that you're trying to kill them. And I thought that's about the sum of it, because all you ever get here is old farmers have done this, old farmers have done that, old farmers have dumped something in the river. But actually, most farmers are just producing food, and that's what we're doing here.
Explain to me the juxtaposition. So there must be people in your region, right, that love what you've done, and yet all I read in the media is the people who hate you. Your neighbours hate you, the lawyers are at meetings, the community halls full of people. Is there a balance there?
There's the local village, I looked it up the other day, has a population in the last census of 829 people, and 32 have objected to my plans to open a cafe at the farm shop, which means that, you know, 795-odd either don't care or are in favour. But in every village and in every community, I guess, around the world, you have people, and we call them red trouser people here, you know, sort of NIMBYs. And they just make a noise. They just don't like me. You know, lots of people don't like me. And so whatever I try to do, they'll say, oh, no, you can't do that. But the truth of the matter is, in the UK, we've had subsidies from the government, farmers, for many, many years. And now that we've left Europe, those subsidies are stopping. So farmers have to try and earn a crust in a new way. So I thought, well, I'll open a cafe and sell my produce directly to the public, which I thought was a sensible thing to do. But, you know, there are 30 people in the village with red trousers and not much to do all day except moan about things, who are making a noise. And we have a newspaper here called the Daily Mail that rejoices in that sort of thing. And celebrates anyone who's miserable and awful. And so that gets the headlines. But the truth is, they're irrelevant. They don't bother me or anyone else on a day-to-day basis.
Where's the cafe at?
That's where the farm shop, which is the other side of the farm. Yeah, but that I do sympathise with the village slightly. I mean, it's not in the village, but you know, after the programme went out, it became huge, and it's tiny. This shop, it's only, I don't know, 4 metres by 3. It's a tiny little shop. But you know, there are 5-hour queues, and people parked for miles around coming to see it, which has been a bit of a nuisance for people living in the area. And I get that. I sympathise with them. But it's November now. It's coming into winter. The queues are going down. But it's a nice little shop. We just sell stuff from farmers are making in the area, which is rapeseed oil and honey and stuff like that.
Now, the thing you and I may disagree on when we talk about subsidies, and the thing I found most interesting in the program was at the end of the year, of course, if people saw it, you ended up with basically no money. And if it wasn't for the subsidies, you would have had less than no money. What's the rationale in Britain behind paying people basically to do nothing?
It's a European thing. It was before the war, it was decided that we in Britain didn't need to grow food, that we could just, have the in to make cars and tanks and planes and so on, and then buy food from abroad. And then, of course, the U-boats came, and suddenly we nearly starved to death in the Second World War. So after the Second World War, it was decided that Britain would never again not be able to feed itself. And this whole subsidy arrangement happened. So the government paid farmers, effectively subsidised farmers, to grow food, which is now stopping, which is fine. Farmers can stand on their own 2 feet. I know you do over there. Mm. Providing we're allowed to do the things that are necessary in order to make money. But the problem is the rest of the government hasn't caught up here. So the subsidies are stopping, but we're not allowed to do all of the things that everyone else in the world does. I mean, our farming legislation here is extraordinarily vicious. There's a police department for everything, otter police, water police, and cow poo police. I mean, everything is policed beyond belief. So they need to get rid of that and then get rid of the subsidies, and I'm perfectly happy with that, but just let me earn a living in my own way.
Can you, under the current regime, though, if you do well, make money or not?
That remains to be seen. If they get off our backs, I mean, if they're paying our wages effectively, then they can make the rules. I get that. But if they're not paying the wages, they can't make the rules. They can't tell me what to do if they're not paying me. So if they just let me get on with it, then we should be fine. It won't be a huge earning, but it'll be good enough to pay Caleb's wages and put food on the table.
Now, where do the cars fit in these days? Because we had Richard Hammond on the program, a couple of months ago about your lockdown program. And are you still interested in cars, or have farming taken over your life?
Well, it's an extraordinary thing. I couldn't believe it myself, but when the pandemic hit, it was decided that reviewing Hyundais and Volkswagens was not key work, which was fortunate, really, because I was able to do farming, which was deemed to be key work. So that was good. I slightly miss cars. And I miss travelling the world with James and Richard, which is always fun. But hopefully, now it seems to be waning, the COVID business, we can resume that next year. We're certainly planning to, and get the grand tour back to what it used to do.
I don't know how much you know about New Zealand and COVID, but we locked ourselves up and very few people got it.
We're very aware of it. Yeah, we see your Prime Minister on our television screens a lot.
Well, virtually none of us got it, so we know very few people who did. But you did. What was it like?
It was the least ill I've ever been. I sat in a room all by myself, because you're not allowed to mingle, watched all the Bond films, and then went back to work. I just started with Dr. No, I'll just watch the lot. But I wasn't ill. I mean, I've had hangovers far worse than COVID. And I'm a poster boy. I'm fat. I'm 61. I've smoked 250,000 cigarettes. I've had pneumonia. And I was terrified of getting it. I thought, oh, God, if I get this, it's going to be a real curtains. But everybody, man, everyone around here got it all at the same time. And nobody was really very ill at all.
And your sense of it now, because there seems to be some sort of consternation that you might, I don't know, have a plan B, that it's going into winter and you could go down into lockdown again. What do you think is going to happen?
Because nobody knows. I mean, we can't you can't guess what will happen in the future. I think Boris Johnson, our Prime Minister, will be extremely unwilling to lock us down again. I know Europe's having a bit of a tough time at the moment, but providing that the health service can cope, then there's no need to lock down. It's only to protect the hospitals, really. I mean, we can't have pictures of people on the streets, you know, coughing up their last breaths. That would be awful. It's not really civilized. So, but it's in the health service seems to be coping at the moment. So we're just soldiering on. I mean, there are no restrictions here at all now. Have you got your restrictions?
Oh, don't even get me started. The thing with locking down is you don't get COVID, of course, but then you don't get to live your life either.
Okay. Well, no, we're fully. I mean, there are now no restrictions. Nobody wears masks. You can go anywhere and do everything. And it's just been maintained that it seems, I mean, the infection rate is stuck at a fairly constant rate, but, you know, the hospitals are not being overwhelmed. So, you know, our lives are back to normal, which is actually marvellous.
Good. So where's series two at, by the way?
Well, we started filming it in July. So that was just at the beginning of the what would be my third harvest. And so we'll finish filming next July, the beginning of the, you know, my fourth harvest. So we're about nearly halfway through. Then it'll have to be edited. Then it'll have to be translated into every language in the world, and it'll be out whenever that's all been done.
Do you think in watching the series, I just wonder if it's got the potential to be another, you know, Top Gear / Grand Tour? In other words, it becomes and takes on a life of its own. It becomes sort of a cultural phenomenon.
It is the most extraordinary thing because when we were making it, I was, I'll be honest, I was contractually obliged to make a TV show on my own. So I thought, well, I'm done a lot of travelling. I'll just film something at home. I'll film this farming programme. And nobody had a clue that it was going to be as successful as it has been. And we've got a little mail order business now for the farm shop. And it just started to look at where the orders were coming from. I mean, Texas, that's a huge thing. Why on earth are people in Texas watching a British motoring journalist try to, you know, organise his sheep? But it's been a really very successful show, certainly in the UK. So, God, I have no idea what the future holds, but people do seem to like it.
And I couldn't help but thinking, I don't want to get down to the tabloid track here, but you did use the word fat before. As you clamber up and down the tractor and do all the jobs on the farm, that's actually got to be good for you, doesn't it?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm doing my step count. It keeps telling me I'm doing on my phone. It says, you're walking more this year than you did last. I'm not surprised. I did 10 kilometres yesterday. But I think, when you give up smoking, you just become fat, and there's nothing you can do about that. And I have given up smoking, and I have become very fat. So, you know, swings and roundabouts. But, yeah, it is a huge amount of work. And now Caleb, my tractor driver, gone on his first ever holiday. I'm having to do the whole farm by myself this week, which is quite daunting.
And what do they make of it all, the people on the show, who I'm assuming didn't realise what they were in for, and they don't know what they're in for now? I mean, how are they handling it?
Well, I mean, everybody who's on the show worked on the farm anyway. So there's been no casting, as it were. It was, you know, Caleb was the tractor driver, Charlie was the agent, Gerald is the dry stone waller. You know, everyone was here anyway. And Caleb said something quite good the other day. Our local town is called Chipping Norton. And he said, well, he's never been outside Chipping Norton in his life. And he said, everybody knew me in Chipping Norton, and now everybody knows me. So nothing's really changed in his life. I mean, he's down in Cornwall on holiday this week, so I guess he'll be doing a few selfies down there. But, you know, his Instagram followers went from 30 to a million. I mean, it's extraordinary. But I wish him all the best. He's an absolute smashing chap. He really is, and, you know, incredibly entrepreneurial and hardworking. I think he's the, if the if the future of the world is in his hands, then the world's okay. If it's Greta Thunberg, less so probably.
Oh dear, I wasn't going to ask about that smacking bottoms. Did you get through the controversy?
I said she needed to be sent to her room with a smack bottom, which is what happened when I was rude to grown-ups when I was little. And everybody says that you can't say that anymore, but I think you can. She does need a smack bottom, and she does need to be sent to her room and told to develop some manners, which she hasn't got. She's an awful person, and her parents are entirely to blame for it.
The casting, by the way, going back to Gerald and Charlie and stuff, I'm surprised to learn it's not cast, because if you set out to cast that show, they could not have been better cast than what they are.
Exactly. We're very fortunate. I think it shines through. I think if you watch the programme, you just think they obviously are for real, these people. You can just tell. And they are. They worked here, you know, for years and years and years. So we're just filming what actually happens. It's not manufactured. This is what happens on a farm. And one of the things I guess I've learned from, you know, talking to people from New Zealand, actually, and Australia, and all everywhere, really, the Netherlands and America, is what farming is the same all over the world. We may grow different crops and we may different animals and so on, and different practices and different legislation, but ultimately it's the same wherever you are. You're dependent on the weather. You're thwarted at every turn by interfering government nonsense. And so you can watch it being me farming here. And actually, even if you're farming sheep in the South Island somewhere, you know, glaciers in the background, it's still, you just go, yeah, that's the same here. Yeah, we have to do that. I recognise that, which there's a universal language of farming, which is great.
No question about it. Now that you're heading towards Christmas, what do you, you know, do on the farm? Do you go kill whatever you're going to have for lunch?
We haven't got any geeks. Apparently, there's going to be a shortage this year. I can't quite work out what's happened, but everybody went to work before the COVID lockdown thing. And then when it was over, they all went back to work. But nobody seems to be doing anything. So we can't get concrete, we can't get steel, we can't get timber, we can't get turkeys, we can't get microchips to make cars. Nothing's available anymore. It's really weird. But we'll be okay here. We've got enough things to kill and eat, so we'll be fine.
Fantastic! Congratulations on the series, on the book. Go well for Christmas. Cannot wait to see series two, and we'll get you back on when it's on here in New Zealand. Lovely to talk to you.
Lovely chatting to you. Thank you very much. Thank you.